Welcome to Headroom, the podcast where we explore all things essential to mental health and well-being. I'm Jim Owens, your host and licensed mental health counselor at Lansing Community College. While you're about to hear from some phenomenal people who have incredible ideas for you and your life, podcasts are no substitute for professional medical advice. So if you need help, please call or text 988. Okay, having said that, let's get into the Headroom and begin today's conversation. Well, good morning or good afternoon or good evening to anybody who's watching this, but good morning to my guest, Dr. Anna Kelly. Thanks morning. For coming in.
Thank you.
This is a familiar campus to you, as I learned walking over to the studio with you. You were here once before, so I want the listeners to get to know you just a little bit. So kind of who are you, where are you from, and what your background is a little bit, and then we're going to talk about mental health, and you are a healthcare provider like me. You're an instructor of healthcare providers, so we'll get into all that, but yeah, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay, sure. So my name is Anna Kelly, and I'm an associate professor of nursing at Columbia University. My background was, I was a Michigan State student.
All right. And I was, green.
Yep, it was fabulous. Yeah. Go white. And then I also spent some time here at LCC. I was also a supplemental instructor in physiology. After I graduated, I went to the Peace Corps in Namibia and taught there, and that's where I decided to become a nurse. I came back to the area as a second-degree nursing student. That's sort of where the nursing journey began.
Okay. I didn't know that about you, so this is cool. Yeah. I'm always learning things about my guests when they're coming. So what did you graduate with before you went to the Peace Corps?
So I did biology, and I was sort of toying between medicine or teaching, because I really liked teaching a lot, but I just didn't have a concept of what nursing looked like. I didn't have a lot of experience in hospitals, and so it was only once I was in Namibia at the clinic where I had an opportunity to see what nurses can really do, and it just changed my whole career path.
Oh, wow. Set your heart on fire for that,
I can see. Yes, it really did,
and you've spent your career as a nurse and a nursing educator,
Absolutely.
So how long were you in Namibia for?
So I was there 2 years teaching biology, but ended up sort of becoming an impromptu sort of health aide in a way, and that's where I really got interested in nursing.
Man, I'd love to hear a little bit about that right now before we get into the rest of your academic career and stuff like that. Like, what was the healthcare like in Namibia at the time? This would have been, I don't know, what, the 2000s?
So this was 2001 to 2003.
Okay.
And it was at the time when HIV was really reaching a peak. And it was before antiretroviral therapy was available. Unfortunately, we were seeing a lot of death from that. It was a difficult time, and there was actually a tremendous amount of stigma around it as well. People would not always share that they were passing from HIV. It would always be things like GI issues or tuberculosis. But unfortunately, we were seeing that underlying event.
Oh, so their symptoms, they would say that they fell under a different diagnosis.
Not
unlike in mental health.
Sure.
When people show up, I'm really stressed. Are you sure it's not something like a word you don't want to use, like anxiety or depression? Okay.
That's
Was that something like that?
Yeah, it might be something like that.
But and we were laughing about the stigma because it's ridiculous.
I
mean, you need to be honest with, well, I'll say as a therapist yourself, but certainly with your healthcare provider about what's really going on so you can get the best treatment possible.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So, but anyway, you were able to see folks there, and it's interesting how you went there to teach. What were you teaching? English, science, something like
biology.
Oh, you were teaching biology, but they needed you in the, or you got working as a health aide in the clinic somewhat.
Yeah, we just sort of connected with the clinic there. Okay. I saw the nurse was running the whole clinic, and every now and then, so we could help with maybe some trainings about health promotion, HIV prevention, things like that. And students sometimes, if they had health issues, we would try to help with some small things so it didn't overburden the clinic.
Well, we sort of have this spectrum or this hierarchy of healthcare professionals in the States where, you know, physicians are at the top and nurses are somewhere below there. But in the rest of the world and throughout human history, they're doing the bulk of the work. Are they not? Not to knock on my physician friends,
but
you
mean,
you know, like we sometimes underestimate what nurses are doing. They're doing frontline heavy lifting every day.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's, you know, the largest healthcare profession.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So
we have more nurses than any other profession.
We do. We do.
And we probably don't have enough.
Right. And it's still the case.
That's absolutely why you're, hopefully that's why you're teaching. The reason I went into training counselors is two things. One, I knew there wasn't enough. So somebody had to teach to train more. And number two was I wanted good ones out there because I'd heard too many stories about bad ones. And in fact, that's how my journey as a my passion for counseling started was a friend who told me she was in therapy not getting any help.
Okay.
And I just thought, I mean, I was so naive. I just thought, well, if you're seeing a psychologist, it seems like you'd be getting better.
Right.
That's how, you know, naive
yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
So then you go from Namibia back here, say, that's it. I'm going to be a nurse, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Pretty close. Yeah. And then I wanted to move back to Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so then while I was waiting to get into nursing school, that's where I came to LCC. Mm-hmm. And that was a fabulous experience. I loved it here.
Yeah.
Because it was just people from all over the world. And so it felt like I was still connecting a lot with people from different cultures. Mm-hmm. And then I really love the supplemental instruction, getting to do teaching physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my wife did that. I was saying, you guys get your own classroom, do
right.
study hours and like preps and
yeah.
for exams and,
yeah.
and then individual tutoring. And
mm-hmm.
But I'm so glad you had that experience here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the same. I love the school. I've been here over 30 years. And
wow.
the diversity of the student population is one of the things that I experienced right from the beginning.
Yep.
I grew up kind of in West Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Dutch, Christian, lily white
okay.
community.
Gotcha.
At least it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
There wasn't much diversity over there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to this big city of Lansing and
right.
going to the inner city community mm-hmm. college, I immediately met and made friends with folks from Africa, Japan, South America, other counties in Michigan that are quite different than Ottawa County where I grew up. I loved that diversity, and I'm so glad you got to experience. What was that? A similar experience at MSU, and then as you went on to teaching, did you find that diversity in your classes over at State, or was it not?
I think that was a struggle, that there wasn't as much. It was something that they were working on. They had gotten a HRSA grant to try to help improve the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it continues to be a struggle, but something that they've focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even at my current institution, that's something we really struggle mm-hmm. with and focus on as well.
Bringing in diversity. Yeah.
Yes. But LCC sort of has always had that right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how that started, but it's been a great thing for us ever since.
Well, I think cost helps a lot.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. an open door. It's an open door.
A very open door feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say we're a college right on the curb level. Like you can just step right off the street into us.
Yeah. Right.
And mm-hmm. I love that. We're not some ivory tower.
Right.
I'm not going to pick on the Ivy League schools.
That's all right.
Even though one of us at the table teaches at one.
Yeah.
But it is. It's reachable.
Mm-hmm.
It's reachable immediately for people. And we can take, you know, almost anybody off the street.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. I think people love hearing this because so many of our listeners are students and their educational paths are not linear. They're curvilinear.
Mm, for sure.
And I think it's helpful for them to hear from folks like us who've, quote unquote, been successful, that our paths were circuitous as well, right? We didn't have mm-hmm. this clear, like, not since you were 8 years old did you know you wanted to be a nurse.
Nope.
And et cetera, et cetera. It was like there was some finding yourself along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the way I would describe it is your heart got opened up in a way that you probably didn't even know it could get that big when you were in Namibia, seeing the struggle there and the people. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to put it. I mean, it was definitely, I would say, an eye-opening experience. And I felt the sense of gratitude and like a deep feeling of like wanting to connect and give back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So nursing was like a proper fit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up the rest of your educational
sure.
journey there. Can we for everybody so they understand where
yeah.
how you ended up where you're at. So then you come back to Lansing where you kind of grew up in this area and then you went to State.
Right.
Finished a nursing degree then, a second degree.
Yeah.
Nursing.
They had just started the second degree accelerated program.
Okay.
I loved that program. It was cool. Fast to the points, mm-hmm. good education.
You were an adult learner at that point,
oh,
if I may
man.
Say so.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
you were ready to just give me the schoolwork. I can get it done. I'll crank it out. Yeah.
That's exactly how it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't need the college experience.
Right.
I had that.
I had it already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
what happened after that? Did you go into work or?
Yeah, I went to work. I've worked at a couple different hospitals. I was at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland and then Indiana University Hospital in Indianapolis.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And so I got my nurse, like bedside nursing experience there.
Mm-hmm.
Which was fabulous, fast-paced, difficult.
What kind of work were you doing? Yeah, like what kind of units were you working in?
I started with cardiac step-down for those
okay.
who are familiar.
Yeah.
So like post-operative cardiac conditions. That was pretty intense.
Yeah.
And then I moved into medical ICU, the MICU,
oh, wow.
which I loved particularly because there we have a 2-to-1 patient ratio.
Okay.
Yeah. I really love being able to just focus, and it was high intensity, so you get to feel like you're using a lot of your science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very high level intellectual discussions on the floor about what we're going to do to treat this person
or that person. Right, right. Yeah. So that felt nice. But, you know, sometimes nursing students will say, but I want to connect with my patients, and if they're on a ventilator, I feel like I can't connect with them.
Okay.
But actually, in that case, you connect so deeply with the family and friends at the bedside, and then sometimes you even get the benefit of seeing the patient come off the ventilator, and then you get the chance to potentially talk to them. I found it quite rewarding still in that capacity. Yeah.
Well, you're right on the edge with patients at that point then, right? I mean, if they're in ICU, it's touch and go.
It very much can be, yeah.
Ooh, but I mean, I almost want to dig into like some of the vicarious trauma of our work.
Okay.
I will say, I mean, a little bit. And we know, I have friends who are nurses and we talk about trauma bonding that happens on the floor.
Sure.
And in my world, it's a little bit different. Counselors, we don't really trauma bond the same way that nurses might because we don't talk to each other during the day while we're doing our work, really.
Okay.
We're seeing people quietly. It's one-on-one. It's not two-on-one. Although I may see 5 or 6 clients in a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sharing that experience with people as the day is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in nursing floors, you kind of are. I mean, in ICU, I don't know how many beds might be up there, a dozen or something. You have your two, but there's, what, 3 or 4 other nurses up there with you that you can, I was going to say commiserate with. That's not the right word, but communicate with.
Yeah.
I don't know. Talk to me about that a little bit about that, like that experience of working.
Yeah, it was pretty important to have that deep connection with each other. For me, I deal with things with humor. And so it felt like any way we could sort of make the experience more fun. So we would do, like when it was time to like give the hygiene care, we would do bed baths together, put on some music and like help each other out. And that way we could do like a really thorough assessment of the patient because we're both, you know, we're checking carefully.
Yeah.
But it makes it just like a little bit lighter, a little more fun.
Yeah.
Just those type of things. I felt like the teamwork helped.
To carry the load.
Yeah.
That's important. I mean, we can talk about that later, too, and I have with previous guests. But doing difficult work, which I'm not going to put our work as more difficult than anyone else's.
Right.
Every job has its own challenges. But ours interfaces life and death quite a bit more frequently. Yours even more so, especially having worked in an ICU. And to share that experience with other people, it's just like the more people you have involved in it, the more it divides up the stress of the experience, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an extra person there with you, it cuts the emotional weight of it in half because you can share it with someone.
Mm.
I don't know
nice
if that's the exact math, right?
Yeah.
But I know for me, when I have a rough session with a client, I will then go do a consultation with a colleague and say, I need to process. And they'll sit there with me for 10 minutes and I can just get my feelings out because I've just heard, again, one of the worst stories of what can happen to human people.
Right.
I hear about it. I don't see it like you did. You would see things. I'd have to hear about it and paint the picture in my mind. Which is, I don't know if that's worse sometimes or not.
Right.
So then what happens? You go ICU. And you're working as a nurse, and at some point you decided to go back to school yet again.
Yeah.
So where are we at in that process?
Right. I always knew I wanted to become, well, once I started the nursing journey, I should say, I knew I wanted to become a nursing professor.
Okay.
Because I loved teaching while I was in Namibia, so I knew that was my end goal.
Okay.
So I just went back to my professors and I asked them, what do you recommend? What's the best path?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you know for sure you want to be in academia, PhD is a good direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the direct entry PhD program at Michigan State.
Wow, okay.
Which allowed me to sort of bypass the master's and then go directly into the PhD in like about a 5-year period.
That's amazing. So what would other students do? Go on through for like a nurse practitioner degree and then PhD or what?
Sure. There were definitely a lot of options actually.
Okay.
And for those familiar again with nursing, the doctorate of nursing practice is another terminal degree that you can get, which when I was starting in like 2006 or so for my doctoral studies, for doctoral studies, it was later on 2009. The DNP wasn't fully understood yet at that point as much in academia, but it is now.
Okay.
So any who would be interested in that as a way to move into academia, that path works wonderfully as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you knew. Mm-hmm. So you were kind of, I mean, strategic then. I mean, Cleveland Clinic is no accident then. If you knew you wanted to be an academic, was that part of that?
And well, I mean, but
that's
even then.
It's a prestigious place. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to be, at that time, I really enjoyed the cardiac nursing.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
Yeah. That's why I went there because they were considered top in the nation for cardiac care.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good learning experience. Yeah. less charmed by Cleveland itself as a community, which I want to be clear, that's probably because I didn't give it enough time.
Yeah.
But so then I liked Indianapolis a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a nice city.
Yeah, it's very, very pretty city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're working on your doctorate while you're nursing then? Or did you have to stop nursing to finish your schooling?
After about a year, I had to stop then and focus, because with the doctoral studies, it was more, it just fit better to be either a teaching assistant or research assistant. Okay. So that's where I spent my time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm guessing you loved that, and you then got, so tell me what happened after that. You graduate with the Renaissance hat, the floppy hat. That's the one we always see. That everybody wants to get that floppy hat.
Yeah, I look charming in my hat.
So. The doctoral hat. Yeah. So then what happens after that? You walk out with your doctorate, and then you say, what happens?
Yeah. So I did my PhD research in South Africa because I wanted to return to that region of the world. Yeah. And we focused on HIV and tuberculosis care, trying to look a little bit more at patient advocacy. Mm-hmm. And so when I finished, that topic led me to do a postdoctoral fellowship at Columbia with a professor there, Dr. Larson, who focuses on infectious disease.
Oh, cool.
So that was a good opportunity to sort of continue that work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And that led into then an assistant professorship at Columbia. Is that right?
Correct. That's how it came to be. I did enjoy the research, but I always knew I loved teaching the most.
You wanted to teach her more.
Yeah. You know the story.
Yeah.
And so I talked to my advisor about that, and she said, well, there's an opportunity of professors going on maternity leave if you want to teach that class. It was the pathophysiology course, and it ended up going really well. And so,
but you loved pathophysiology.
Yes, I did love it. Yeah. Oh, going just, deep. Yeah, into the science. Yeah. And so then I was able to then switch over to then they hired me on as an assistant professor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. It was a great journey.
So a bunch of big cities you've lived in.
Yeah,
and really,
that's
true. Cleveland, moved Indianapolis,
around.
New York City. I don't know what the cities were like where you were at in Namibia or South Africa, but
I was in a rural place most of the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what was the state of mental health care in South Africa? Not just the country, but Southern Africa. Do you have a sense of that when you were there? Was that even on anybody's radar?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because that was like one of the main findings on the dissertation work.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were looking at side effects of drug-resistant tuberculosis treatment.
Okay.
And so it was known that one of the drugs in particular caused a major side effect of even as far as psychosis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so we sort of just tracked with interviews to see what patients would indicate they were feeling.
Okay.
So we used words like anxiety and depression as best as they were understood in the local language.
Yeah.
And then we compared them to what was written in their medical chart for what was documented. And of all the symptoms, it was the anxiety and depression that was almost never documented in the medical chart. But patients had indicated that they were feeling that. At a high level, whereas all the other physical symptoms were documented.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Scratching my head now.
Yeah, like, I knew you'd enjoy
so
that.
So we don't want to write that down.
Yeah.
So do you suspect patients were actually reporting that up before, earlier in their care, and it just never got written down? Like, people just kind of pushed past it?
Well, and so this is where we tried to be careful how we wrote it up.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you don't want to sort of criminalize the providers who only have a few minutes with the patients. And so they're dealing with something that the patient brings forward, and they're maybe not so quick to say something about depression or anxiety.
Yeah.
And, you know, they may not even ask it. And that was, I think, the point we were trying to make. What if we asked?
Oh, wow.
What would they say? Yeah.
Oh, I love that you said, like, come on, we got to start asking these questions, which now they do.
Right.
You and I are about the same age, and I remember going to get my annual physicals, and they never did a mental health screening with me. Mm-hmm. Now they hand me a little, they hand me a little 10-question PHQ, something now, you know, just check, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't even on the radar in our profession, we might say, as healthcare providers as much. I don't know if that was your experience or how you were trained even as nurses. Or nursing back, you know, we could talk about it 20 years ago now, at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that mental health screening even part of a general check-in or checkup?
No, you're right. That's more recent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff was still going on back then. We just weren't asking the questions.
Yeah.
And so whether or not people were writing it down in the chart, part of that is because it wasn't part of the process.
Right.
It wasn't expected of them necessarily to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And mental health is still a very new science. I struggle to even use the word science on it, honestly. It's pretty abstract. And everyone's experience is quite different, but we have terms that we can try to use to I don't want to say pathologize, but to put the experience into pathological terms so that we can talk about treating it and so on. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into the long history of psychology here, but just mm-hmm. briefly, we've tried to, as a profession over the last 100 years, hitch ourselves up a little bit more to the medical model so that we can be a little bit better understood and that we understand exactly what it is we're working on with individual patients. We don't even necessarily use the word patient in my profession too often. We often use the word client still, even though it's healthcare. I have a healthcare license, but we still say client as if it's a business transaction.
You know, it's the same in nursing. We even had to switch all of our questions, like our exam questions, to client.
To client.
Yeah.
Is it now client? Is it
yes.
Not, so it's not patient anymore.
No, it's client.
That's too bad because
for training.
Okay, for training. Mm. Yeah, I'm curious because I love the origin of that word patient. It means it's from the Latin for suffering. It means one who suffers.
Well, okay.
Well, think about it.
Yeah.
You have patience for someone.
I know.
It's like a similar
yeah.
word, but anyway, client. Yeah, but anyway, the medical model that we've tried to come along with, and the mental health professionals use a diagnostic book published by the American Psychiatric Association. So it's published by medical doctors, MDs and DOs. And we use that. But anyway, it's just a long way around of me saying it's hard to put, we don't have a lab test for depression. We don't have a blood test. We don't have a cuff we can put around your shoulder or your arm to test a lot of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's really hard for us to figure out where someone is at biologically. In fact, psychiatry and psychology is the only profession that I'm aware of that doesn't look at the organ they treat.
That's fascinating. That makes a lot of sense.
And it's hard to look
right.
at the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually expensive. We
right.
can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if we were to look in there, we can't yet quite see these neural circuits mean this and these neural circuits mean that, or this neurochemistry means this or that. I mean, we do know enough about some of the physiology of the brain to know what low dopamine or serotonin levels might look like.
Mm-hmm.
Or we certainly know, I don't know if you're familiar with SPECT scans, that single photon emitted computerized tomography or fMRIs and things. I mean, we can look in the brain now mm-hmm. and kind of see what's going on a little bit better than before, but we still don't have a data set where we could compare your brain and my brain to a normal brain, whatever that might be,
mm-hmm.
and see how left or right we are of a mentally healthy brain, let's say,
mm-hmm.
which we can kind of do that with a heart, can't we? With a cardiac, like we
right.
can take a look at blockages and visceral fat and stuff. I mean, I'm not going to speak out of my my discipline here, but you can tell, right? I mean, you
yeah.
can tell what a healthy heart looks like versus an unhealthy heart. It's harder to do that with a brain.
Right. And you just think about these quick clinic visits.
Yeah.
Where you only have a few minutes maybe with a patient, and then you think about the cost, and
yeah.
that's prohibitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a big part of this too in your field, right? To try to get costs down so that we can do more. Is that right? Is it like, where can we? No. You hesitated. There's not a movement for that. Healthcare is expensive.
I'd like to think, there's definitely a lot of people working on that. But at the mm-hmm. same time, it's been a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's yeah. a lot of players involved.
Oh, yeah.
The institutions, insurance companies, everybody's
yeah.
involved in the process.
Yeah.
So it's very complicated to get
mm-hmm.
the cost down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, again, going back to the history of my field, I mean, it's like rich people got to go to therapy in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. I mean, that's who went to therapy, and then healthcare plans and so on. It's more accessible now, but it's still not. It's not
where it should be.
It's not where it should be.
Yeah.
Not everybody can
mm-hmm.
get access to mental health care, for
mm-hmm.
sure. Can't get access to physical health care either.
Yeah, that's right.
Not in our country anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that you're working on that. You got
yeah,
any grad
yeah.
students working on that?
Right.
So maybe, yeah, we're going a little yeah. dark here. Like this
yeah.
is not the, our healthcare, but we're being honest, right? Our professions are not yet where they need to be.
Yes.
Medicine isn't where it needs to be. Healthcare is not where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the fight. You're educating.
There you go. Yeah.
You're training. So mm-hmm. tell us where you're at now. We'll wrap up part one and we'll come back for part two in,
sure.
In a few minutes. But what are you doing as a nurse educator? What are you seeing? What's your mission there?
Yeah. So, I think I'm in my eighth year now teaching. So I was teaching medical surgical nursing. I've moved mm-hmm. more into pharmacology and leadership
mm-hmm.
now. So those are a couple of the courses I'm mm-hmm. I'm teaching. And so, yeah, it has been very interesting watching progression of student learners.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you and I have dialogued about as
yeah.
well. Some of the challenges of helping to connect with students. And I think a conversation that all of us have in academia is about issues of grit and resilience
mm-hmm.
and how do we help to foster that with our students as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been something we've been thinking a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Preparing them not just academically, but the development of their character or some their not even character per se, that more speaks to like their morals, but how would you put it?
But something connected to that. I would agree with you. It's hard to quite put a word or name on it.
Yeah.
But there is something deeper that I think we want to be able to connect with our students, especially whenever they're patient facing.
Yeah.
And how do we pull that out and not focus so much on grades,
yes,
but still keep an excellent standard of education? That's it. Yeah, let's just solve that problem quickly here.
You're right. You and I, because we have, we literally have commiserated over, yes, over classroom experiences, both being educators and
right,
the hard part. Like, I just assume they're all going to do the work with integrity on time.
Sure.
I don't even want to talk about the academic side of their path,
That's a deep conversation.
Right. I just want to get to the, like, you need to prepare yourself for what is coming.
Yeah. Right? There you go. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about more like how we've done that for ourselves in part two. Does that sound good?
Okay. Sounds great.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Headroom. Remember, if you need mental health assistance, you can always call or text 988. And if you're a current LCC student, free mental health counseling is available to you at the college. You can learn more at lcc.edu/counseling. I want to thank our producers here at LCC Connect and encourage you to explore other amazing podcasts at lccconnect.com. Thanks again for listening. Take care, and we'll see you next time in the Headroom.
Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Performing Arts is proud to present Summer Stage Under the Stars, featuring a 10-minute play festival directed by Paige Dunkel and Shelley Peterson. A wonderful variety of styles and concepts for this evening of theater, including In the Closet by Stephanie Morales. A young woman discovers she's been hiding something in her closet that wants to break free. Featured at LCC's Outdoor Amphitheater, July 23rd through the 27th at 7 p.m. In the event of rain or extreme heat, performances will move into Dart Auditorium. For more information, visit lcc.edu/show info. All performances are free to attend.
My next move is an enrollment event for new and returning adult students. If you're 25 or older and thinking about taking classes at LCC this fall, the admissions office welcomes you with a chance to learn about funding opportunities, program offerings, support services, and more. My next move takes place Wednesday, June 25th. Register to attend at lcc.edu/mynextmove.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
It's time for Inside LCC, an inside look at Lansing Community College's academic programs. I'm Cassie Little, and we've got you covered with programs that nourish creativity and exploration, cultivate your purpose, and guide you to your career. Listen as we explore some of the opportunities at LCC and learn from conversations with faculty members, staff, and students.
Hello, welcome back to Inside LCC. I'm Cassie Little, and today I'm joined by Dr. Mindy Wilson with LCC's biotechnology program. Welcome to Inside LCC, Dr. Mindy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So let's start out, if you can tell everyone, your name, title, program you work in.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Mindy Wilson, and I'm a professor of biology, and I coordinate the biotechnology program at LCC.
Awesome. So the biotechnology program, can you give us the elevator pitch and tell us a little bit about that program and what you do?
Yeah. First thing, LCC has one of the oldest biotechnology programs in the country. It was established in 1987, and students learn about industry standards, cutting-edge skills used in the biotech industry, and molecular biology disciplines. The biotech program teaches practical skills needed to work in bio-based careers. It's about exploring small science to tackle big problems like pandemic vaccines, world hunger, and alternative energy systems.
All right. Very topical things to study, I think. And I really like that you said small science to tackle big problems. So at LCC, what are some of the degrees or certificates offered in that area?
Yeah, LCC offers an Applied Associates of Science and a Certificate of Completion. So these degrees are stackable, meaning that the Certificate of Completion coursework can be applied to the Applied Associates.
That's really nice. Basically, a student could start taking the classes, earn a certificate on the way to their associate's degree. And I think that's rewarding. You get to see a little bit of, I guess, results for your work on the way to getting the degree, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I don't know that much about biotech. Can you tell us a little bit, maybe an example of the jobs that someone could get in that area?
Well, jobs in biotech are wide-ranging. In addition to, say, biological laboratory technician or research scientist, biotechnology jobs can be found in many sectors of employment. That would include agriculture, forestry, medicine, law enforcement, public utilities, military, higher education, public health, and the pharmaceutical industry. Some of the careers you would find within those areas would be like education, supervision, management, technical and analytical, and sales.
Wow. So it sounds like you can work in a wide variety of areas and make it work for you, right? If people want to work outside, it looks like there's jobs outside. If people want to work in a lab, there's jobs in a lab with other people, maybe alone. It looks like a lot of options there. So that's really cool.
Yeah. In the past, I've worked in labs and I've climbed cocoa trees at Hershey's Chocolate World. So you never know what you end up doing.
I love that. That's great. Could a student start working after graduation at LCC with that, you know, certificate or associate's degree, or would they usually want to transfer to continue their education first?
Yeah, it really depends on a student's career goals. The program was designed to be versatile, to meet the needs of diverse student interests and their own goals. So students have gotten technician positions with the Applied Associates, or they've transferred to a four-year institution for further training. It really depends on their goals. Mm-hmm. Some students that already have a bachelor's degree in a discipline, general discipline of biology or chemistry, will actually come to LCC to get the biotech Applied Associates or certificate to be able to specialize in biotechnology or use the degree for career advancement, like for a promotion in an established job.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that some students come back to school to specialize in that area. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And again, that sounds like more options for variety for students, being able to maybe get a job after getting the associate's degree or deciding to transfer on for further training. How about some of the employers that have hired students in the biotechnology area?
Yeah, some of the recent ones that come to mind are Neogen, Eurofin Lancaster, NSF International, the Michigan State Police Forensics Lab, the MSU Bioeconomy Institute, Merit Labs, Working Bugs, Emergent, Board of Water and Light, the State Bureau of Labs, and most recently, SkyMint.
All right. I'm familiar with some of those places. So if a student's thinking about taking these courses or pursuing this degree or certificate, what's it like to actually be a student in this program? Can you give an example of a specific class that a student in your program might take?
Yeah, we actually have three major capstone courses for the Applied Associates as well as the certificate. And those are Molecular Biology 1, Molecular Biology 2, and one that we designed in collaboration with industry, local industry here, is called STEM Workplace Practices. All of these courses contain hands-on, project-based, skill-building activities to develop critical thinking skills and laboratory techniques within the context of the biotechnology discipline. In Molecular Biology 1, students often present their projects at Starscapes and many times at scientific conferences.
Oh, that's really cool. So Starscapes, in case you're not familiar, is kind of a showcase for students at LCC. They do showcases on campus as well as online of capstone projects, which I'm sure is a part of this, research that they've done, art pieces, things like that. So that's really cool to see that that's a place that they can share that. How about telling us a little bit more about what the classroom experience is like?
Well, one of the things we'd like to do is take field trips to the local companies, like some of the employers that I mentioned before, like Neogen, the Michigan Bioeconomy Institute, or the State Bureau of Labs. And that gives them an opportunity to see science being done in the real world, or biotech or bio-based science done in the real world.
That's so valuable to see how that's actually going to be applied, I think. How about a story about a classroom experience?
Well, around 2008, when medical marijuana became legal, my students wanted to, I would ask them to design a project that would be important to find out about. And students wanted to look at the DNA in different strains of medical marijuana. And again, this was after it became legal. Now, legally, they could not work with the plant on campus. The Department of Public Safety would not allow that. But they would allow students to work with the DNA. So kind of as an added bonus to their learning is they had to design a DNA extraction field kit.
Wow.
And they had to figure out how to isolate DNA out in the field, take some of the equipment and create just a little field kit so that they could isolate the DNA at the grower's location or the dispensary. And then they could bring that DNA to campus and work with that to analyze it. So they ended up learning a wide variety of skills in that experience.
That is really cool. Again, I like hearing some of those examples of what students are doing in the actual class, and just showing some of this, hands-on learning that's taking place is really cool. How about your experience working in the field? I'm sure you have probably a lot of stories, but any stories about your experience in the field?
Well, besides climbing cocoa trees,
yes.
I was a research scientist for a few decades before settling into higher education. I worked in the pharmaceutical industry in quality control, biomanufacturing, medical school laboratories, and academic laboratories.
Oh, so a wide variety again. What kind of background do you have in this subject?
So I started all of this with a BS in microbiology and then a PhD in molecular virology. I was trained at Penn State, Rutgers, New York Medical College, and then finally at MSU.
All right. Some Big Ten schools in there, I see.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share, Dr. Mindy?
Yeah. So the LCC Biotech Program is the only program in Michigan that is a member of a national network that's focused on biotechnology education. It's called Innovate Bio. And the advantage, I mentioned this because the advantage of being part of this network, it keeps the biotech program aligned with national standards of biotechnology education, as well as current trends in workforce development.
That's really cool. I assume, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, that that's helpful then if people are educated here, that helps to maybe get jobs outside of the state, or just to know that across the nation that those are some of the standards that people are looking for.
Yeah. It's a pretty connected network. I guess I would say every so often there would be a student that would be in one program, say in San Francisco, and they would be moving to Michigan for some reason and would need to complete their biotech program so they're able to transfer into our program, and vice versa.
Yeah,
if people
really
in the military are pursuing the degree and then they need to move. So we have a pretty strong network that way.
And that's called Innovate Bio.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers almost everything. Before you go, though, I do want to ask my Inside LCC question, which is what excites you most about your field? That can be what excites you today, because I know that's a big question, or what excites you overall?
Well, biotechnology is a field where you can make a difference and contribute to solving big world problems like pandemic vaccines, world hunger, and alternative energy systems.
That's really great. Well, thank you for joining us today and talking to us about the biotech program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Again, that's Dr. Mindy Wilson with LCC's biotechnology program. We will, as usual, put information in the show notes if you want to hear more. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been Inside LCC. I'm Cassie Little, and if there's a specific degree and program you want to hear more about, let us know by contacting us at lccconnect.org. Thanks for taking a listen. Inside LCC.
Sharing the voices of Lansing Community College. Visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College is a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship, offering graduating high school seniors who live within the Lansing School District and attend a high school within district boundaries an opportunity to attend LCC. The scholarship offers 65 credits over the course of 4 years from high school graduation. For more information on the Lansing Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
For over 30 years, Ellie's Place has provided grief support to children and teens at no cost to families, serving over 31,000 individuals in the Capital Region. They offer peer-to-peer support groups that provide a safe place for individuals to talk about the death of someone near them, while working through their feelings and emotions as they learn to embrace loss. We're a stronger community when we care for each other. For more information and grief resources, visit elliesplace.org.
New and experienced motorcycle riders, LCC's Adult Enrichment Program offers motorcycle safety classes weekly throughout the summer for riders of all skill levels. Classes fill quickly. Find more details at lcc.edu/keeplearning.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Conversations with Kate is like a conversation with your friend, hairstylist, or therapist, where we will talk about music, life, stories, and everything in between, with interviews and guests sprinkled in. As an LCC student, it's an honor, and I love bringing a fresh perspective to the podcast menu on LCC Connect. I am your host, Kate. Let's get into this episode.
Rose, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Oh, I'm so excited too. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Welcome. Okay. For the listeners, give them a little brief intro about you, yourself, your work, family, that type of stuff.
So I put on events for charities amongst the area. They're pretty much all woman-based charities, and I reach out to different ones in the area, and I pick one, and then I do two shows for them and okay. raise money for each of them.
Okay,
that's pretty much what I do in my hobby.
Okay,
we've raised over $25,000 for the county so far.
That's
so
wonderful.
Super excited about that.
How much did you say?
Over $25,000.
Wow. That is so cool. Okay. Yeah. So tell me about like your life outside of the events that you do.
Well, normally I do have a daytime job and I work for a government contractor here in okay. Brevard County.
Okay.
And I'm in HR. And then for hobbies, I do aerial
yes.
arts, and I just for some extra cash, I also do events with aerial as well.
That's nice. So how did you get into doing aerial stuff?
So it's a funny story. I was going through a really rough divorce, and it was a way of an outlet for me to help with the stress during that time.
Okay. What about family? Do you have mom, dad, sister, brother, kids?
Yeah. So I have a son. His name is Kellen. And
so cute.
He's 11.
I love all the pictures.
Thank you. And my mom also lives in town. My dad lives close to Jacksonville, and I have two brothers, older ones.
Okay. So where and when did you kind of get the idea to start doing these events? Which, by the way, thank you so much for having me on this last one. It was so much fun.
Oh, of course. I'm grateful you came.
Yeah. Where and when did the idea come from?
I was in a situation, and I was getting help from family when I was going through a really rough patch in my life, and I was able to get help, but I wanted to give back to the community, to people that wasn't able to receive help in certain situations through charities in the area, like all the shelters and women-based charities to help women and children. So I wanted to, you know, help people that couldn't.
When and where was the first event?
It was also at Iron Oak.
Okay.
We did it for a charity called Genesis House.
Okay.
And it's a shelter for women and children, and they help women get back on their feet. Mm-hmm. They give them clothes. They, you know, give them schooling. They help with housing. They give you, you know, proper attire for interviews.
That's awesome.
Goals.
And is this all in, has everyone been inside and benefiting inside of Brevard County?
Yes.
That's wonderful. If I remember correctly, the one that we did recently was on the 1st of March was the 6th that you did?
Yes, that's number 6.
That's so cool.
So that would be two, that was the last one for Serene Harbor. So I do two for each one.
Okay.
And we raised over $8,000 for Serene Harbor total.
That is so awesome. And again, you going back, you said in total of all 6 shows, you've raised how much? 25,000?
Over 25,000. Yeah. Yep.
That is so phenomenal. The work that you're doing is leaps and bounds above and beyond what I've seen most women do, especially in that type of situation. They kind of just, you know, we go through things and they don't turn around and give back and help other people. That being said, what were the other events and what were the other foundations or areas that you helped?
So the first two were Genesis House.
Okay.
The second two was Driven by Heart, and that's a breast cancer charity.
Okay.
But they're like also a nonprofit, but they help women get items they need while they have breast cancer. And I had several friends that were going through that during that time. And that was way of me giving back. And we also had a breast cancer survivor who was DJing that evening. And we split half of our 50-50 to her.
That's
without
so
her
awesome.
Knowing, we just brought her up on stage and just gave the money to her to help with her medical bills. And that's the reason why I did that one, is because I had a friend pass away, and then one of my DJs was actually playing the event, had breast cancer.
Okay. That's so incredible. Absolutely incredible. You're such an amazing human being.
Well, thank you. So are you.
Thank you. So describe for me the, like, is there a umbrella for your events, or like give me the different like names for the events and that type of thing?
We like to focus on different names. So like the first one, Resurrection.
Okay.
I'm coming back.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Like I'm coming back to where I need to be. Like,
yes.
And it was like different stages of what I was kind of going through.
Mm-hmm.
This last one, Siren, was actually, it was Jamie Blue's birthday. And so when she said she wanted to name it Siren because she used to be a dancer, like a go-go dancer, that's what her group was called.
Oh, that's
and
so
neat. I was like, we're going to name it Siren after you.
Oh, that's so awesome. I didn't know she was a dancer.
Yep. She was a go-go dancer from way back, and she used to dance at the House of Blues.
What? That is so awesome.
Yeah, she was a really good dancer.
Oh, I'm
she
so
still
glad.
Is
she really? I mean, yes. And she's such an amazing human as well. It was so much fun getting to meet her. Also, just an FYI, the event, like getting to be able to get in there and see so many people that I hadn't seen in so long and touch base with them. Like, it was like a coming home at the same time as like an expansion, because I've met so many new and wonderful people on the same wavelength of like, you know, we've been through X, Y, and Z, and instead of like we're expounding on that, we're growing and growing through these things. And it feels it felt so great to be inside of a room full of women that are on that same level.
Yeah, we like to party with a purpose.
Exactly. And it was very fun. And my niece got to dance all night long. Her poor little knees still hurt.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yes. Okay, so describe for me, if you were to hand pick one of the six events, describe for me which one and like why it meant the most to you.
I would have to say the first one was, it meant the most to me, like at first, and then this last one, probably.
Okay.
But you know, they all had different meanings and everything was done for certain reasons and stuff like that. But the first one was really like me trying to like break out of my shell where I was hiding.
Yes.
And, the last one, it was just, it felt different.
Yeah.
Like I was dancing and I didn't feel like as stressed because I put the whole show together and it just felt like I was free.
That's so awesome.
And it felt like, wow, this, I can relax. This is, everything's great. Mm-hmm. And then of course we're going to do more.
Right.
But
yes,
it
yes.
just felt like I was, it just felt good. Like, not that I didn't feel good in the other ones, but something just released.
I love that.
Inside
love
of
that.
Me.
Yes. Oh my God. I love hearing that. So talk to me a little bit about your journey that brought you to these events, as far as like, what kind of growth stuff did you have going on? Like, what was that like for you?
So I would have to say, like, I didn't really go out for a while, but I wanted to do something that would bring arts and entertainment together and have everybody kind of be together. But I only wanted women DJs, only because it gives them the chance to network with each other, lift each other up.
Yes.
And I would, you know, wanted to rotate them out so each of them would have a chance. So I, you know, would call, know, certain people so I could find more DJs or just because there's not that many women DJs out there, of course. So it's not a whole lot to choose from, but there is.
Yeah.
Without flying them all here.
Right.
But I wanted to have something so we all could be together and lift each other up and, you know, the more the merrier.
Yes.
Let's bring them all.
Like, I agree.
Bring all the girls. Like, we have the dancers, we have, you know, the aerialists, we have live painting going on. We have, you know, women donating their art that they've painted.
Yeah, that was so cool to see.
Yeah. And it's just a whole community event. We wouldn't call it a rave event. We would call it a community event because everybody is involved.
Exactly. And I mean, even at the end of the night, I think it was Darcy was like, this is so like, and believe me, that young woman, oh my goodness, she has blossomed so much. I love her dearly.
Yes.
And she was just like, this is such a different atmosphere being here with all of you ladies and like, no offense, guys. But when you're around a lot of guys, there's a lot of ego involved in stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was just like being here and being around all of you women and everybody's just lifting each other up and everybody is just here for the greater good and to help each other grow, which speaks volumes to what you've created, the atmosphere that you've created in these events?
It's not about like even how much I make either. It's just about, hey, you know, I can make a dollar, but that's more money than they had before. And it's not about like that. It's about just being there with everyone else too.
Yes.
And it's a community.
Yes.
And hopefully by, you know, next year we'll have a larger, you know, larger place and larger group. And
yes.
And I know it's getting bigger because we're raising more money now.
Yes, which is wonderful. So that being said, what is next? Do you have any ideas?
We talked about having one this year, but we're going to go ahead and wait until the, you know, after January.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make it larger this time. So I need a little bit more time to plan. And my partner, Chris from Respro, also agrees with that. So we're in the works of making it for next year.
That's wonderful. Any sneak peeks or any
not
little
yet.
Okay. That being said, my daughter wants to be there next year.
Absolutely.
she's like, I wish I could have come, Mom, but she was at States for her wrestling stuff.
That's good.
Okay, so couple of last little questions that I have for you. What are three fun facts about you that nobody knows?
That's funny. I love to play sound bowls when I'm by myself in quiet rooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's the glass sound bowls. I have a couple of them. I love Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang? Love Wu-Tang. Oh, woman after my own heart. Gotta love it.
Yeah. And I have a shoe and purse problem.
You have a shoe and purse problem?
Yes.
My daughter and I are right there with you. We actually have an entire room in our house that is our closet. It was used to be my studio, and then I moved the studio into the other room in the house, and we now use that room as our closet because there's a closet in there, and it's a whole thing.
That's amazing. I love it. My type of people.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Also, I have one other thing I want to get from you before we close things out. Where can people like find information if they want to donate to one of your events? Is there like a specific website, or is it just per event that you put something up?
We usually just post the link for the event, and then we close it out for each one.
Okay.
But my Facebook for the event, like if I'm throwing a charity event, it's called HIP, and it's Hoops Inspiration Project.
Okay.
And usually I post like updated events that come through there. Okay. And like this Wednesday, we're going to be delivering the check to Serene Harbor, and that'll be posted in there.
And that's called HIP?
Well, it's spelled out Hoops Inspiration Project, and I think it says HIP at the end.
Oh, okay. That's so wonderful. I'm very excited for you to deliver that check.
Thank you. They're very excited too.
I bet they are. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so last little tidbit. What is the best advice that you've ever been given?
Don't try to beat yourself up because you're doing better than you think. People notice what you're doing, and you don't want to like forget that because you're in emotion and you don't think that people are actually noticing, but you're inspiring some people.
Yeah, that is true.
You don't even realize it.
Yep. I agree. And you do inspire a lot of people. Like today on Facebook, I like opened my Facebook up and here's this freaking post from you about the shine clothes. I'm like, oh my God, yes. Woman after my own heart. Like, yes, that's right. Shine, shine. You guys are all going to have to look at it.
Yes.
Okay.
You might as well unfollow me if you don't like it.
Exactly. You're just going to have to unfollow. And I think that is something that a lot of people, when they've been through the situations, like what brought you to doing these events, where they're afraid to do that. And mm-hmm. being able to kind of break through that and do exactly just that and be unfettered and your true authentic self and just like, psh, I don't care. I applaud you. And it's wonderful and exciting to see and inspirational to me even.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And okay, so then the last little question is, what is the worst advice you've ever been given?
Oh, that's a good one. Worst advice is you can probably change that person.
Ooh.
So some people can be changed, but it's you just have to make sure that you're doing the right thing always, even if people around you aren't going to change.
Yeah, that's a good one. You can't change people. That is very true. You can maybe help them. If they want it, but you cannot change people.
Yes, they're going to do what they want.
Exactly. Okay, so give me all of your socials.
So Facebook, it's HIP, and that's Hoops, H-O-O-P-Z, mm-hmm. Inspiration Project. Let me just give you my Instagram. It's probably the easiest.
Okay.
So it's Hoops, H-O-O. E-Z
dot 321. Okay. Hoops with a Z dot 321. And that's on Instagram?
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. And when can we be expecting the next event? And have you picked out a foundation yet or a place to donate money to?
We are still researching that okay. as we speak.
Okay.
me and my partner are... Me and him are actually going to be doing this one together. He's never picked out any of the foundations, so he wants to be a part of the next one, he said.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Yay, get him in the mix.
Yeah, he's been my friend for almost 30 years, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is super.
He donates all of his time, his lights, his sound, like he does all that.
Oh, yeah. And even like there was a video that I saw of me DJing and like during one of the little like foghorn moments, he came out with like one of those little air blower things. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he did that. I felt like a stinking superstar. I was like, yes. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, he's got all the toys.
Yeah. And what is his company's name?
Res Pro.
And they do
lights and sounds and stages.
Okay. Is that all of Central Florida or just in Brevard County?
Oh, it's everywhere pretty much. They're going to go to Miami for the Get Down in SSOB, that party
nice.
For music conference. He's going to be helping out with that too. So it really depends. But mostly it's like Central Florida area.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and chatting. And I cannot wait to see your face again and hug you again and play music and do this whole thing all over again.
Absolutely.
And one more time, your Facebook is Rose Parker and the Instagram is?
Hoops, dot 321.
Perfect. Thank you so much. You have been so wonderful.
Thank you. So are you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Conversations with Kate. You can find more information on LCC Connect site, as well as all social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, yes, TikTok as well. Big love.
This has been a presentation of LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. All shows featured on LCC Connect are recorded at the WLNZ studio, located on LCC's downtown campus. Each program is podcast-based and can be heard anytime at lccconnect.org. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on one of our shows, connect with us by emailing lcc-connect@lcc.edu.